Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in State Farm versus Simmons.
May it please the court, Ms. Catherine McCullough, opening argument from petitioner. Petitioner has served 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning. Today I'd like to talk about a case of significant Texas jurisprudence in bad faith because of the changes that the Beaumont Court of Appeals has made in a cause of action that has been carefully crafted and matured by this court. What I'd like to talk about today is three different areas. First and most important to us today is how this particular case fits within the framework of Giles and the Aranda Thomas, that if there is a questionable claim, it can be denied without tort liability. Secondly, I'd like to talk about the DPCA finding and whether this court will allow conduct which clearly doesn't meet the Giles and Aranda test can support a finding in treble damages, additional damages under the DPCA. And third, I'd like to discuss the impact of Morial on the punitive damages award in this particular case. Now, in my application, the court understands and knows that I ask that this court make a change in the law and change the first prong of Aranda to be decided as a question of fact rather than a question of law. I understand and appreciate that this court has gone through a very long and detailed analysis of that issue and has decided that it will remain as a question of fact. I understand that and appreciate that.
You just said the reverse.
I'm sorry. It will remain now as a question of fact, not as a question of law. Perhaps my hopefulness got ahead of me. This case, though, although I still think that is the best way that the law should be in Texas, this case is a case because of the undisputed facts. It's one that we can look at within the frame of legal sufficiency and no evidence, under the Giles test, and still reverse the finding of bad faith because of the evidence in front of the insurance company at the time. Okay, what's our framework? A framework is, the cause of action is, was it reasonably clear that there was coverage? And second, did the insurance company know or should have known that it was reasonably clear that there was coverage and still didn't pay? So there are two different prongs that this court has said in Aranda and recently in Stoker and Shelton has affirmed that there are two separate inquiries. The no evidence review requires that I come forward with undisputed evidence or reasonable inferences from the undisputed evidence and the disputed evidence and show you that even within that framework, there's still a legal sufficiency challenge to this bad faith finding. Now, because Aranda is two different prongs, what I have to show is no evidence on either of those two. Quite frankly, even if Aranda was not still the law, my case was submitted that way, and so for my legal sufficiency review, that would be how we'd look at it. It was submitted as Aranda submission. If you look at the evidence in front of the insurance company at the time this claim was denied, in fact, if you even look at the evidence as it existed at the time of trial, you will see that the evidence on the three prongs of the arson triangle were all met by undisputed evidence. First, the arson. There was never any witness who said that the fire was not intentionally set. In a brief that was filed yesterday by the plaintiff in this case, they made some comments about the fire marshal, and I'd like to briefly respond to those if you don't mind. What happened in this case is the fire marshal went out and did an investigation. At the time the claim was denied, he had concluded that the fire was suspicious, in his words, with a high probability of it being arson. That was on page 728 of the testimony. He said that he closed his investigation because he was too busy. It's pages 791 and 734. After the denial of the claim, he asked for State Farm's fire investigation report, and that, plus his own investigation, led him to believe that the fire was intentionally set. This was after denial. He said that he should have changed his official ruling to arson, and it was his mistake that didn't happen on pages 790 and 807. I think if you look again at the briefing to this court, there's never really any challenge that it was an arson fire.
Was there ever any investigation that it was intentionally set by the same parties that had burglarized the home?
Yes, ma'am, there was, as a matter of fact. In this particular case, once again, and I'm only talking undisputed evidence, the claims adjuster had attempted to find the three people who were responsible for the January burglary that happened 6 months before the fire. He found that at the time of the fire, One was in Dallas, one was in jail, and of course couldn't specify, and one they didn't know where he was. We attempted, State Farm then attempted to try to find these people and couldn't. So that was the undisputed evidence of the investigation that took place to try to find these people. You also had to put that within the context of what the Simmons was told State Farm at the time. What they told them was that they had had no altercations and no real problems with these guys since the January fire. So if you take what State Farm did to investigate plus the framework and the information that the Simmons gave at the time, you come up again to see that the investigation that State Farm did was in fact reasonable. And if I can, let me address right now, because you've asked a question about investigation, and I think that's really the more important point in this particular case, although I do say that the undisputed evidence does lead to a conclusion as a matter of law that liability was never reasonably clear to.
Before you expand on that, yes. You said that the investigator concluded that the fire likely was the consequence of arson.
The fire marshal did.
Fire marshal.
The independent cause and origin investigator that State Farm hired said it was definitely arson.
But neither of them concluded that it was arson caused by the Simmons.
Absolutely not. They were not asked to do that, nor did they do that.
And if it were arson caused by someone else, there would still be coverage, correct?
Absolutely, there would be coverage.
So just the conclusion that there was arson is in fact inconsequential, unless it was pinned on the Simmons.
Exactly, and that, those are the other two prongs of the arson triangle. You have to prove motive and opportunity also. And unless you prove motive and opportunity, you're absolutely correct. What you have is an intentionally set fire that is not set by the insurers, and the insurance contract provides coverage for that. Absolutely.
Ms. McKellip, let me ask a question. If there is a dispute in the record as to the facts about whether or not there was, I don't know, whether or not the doors were locked, from the inside when the house burned down. Well, I'm not sure you could tell that. Or you've got a dispute about not talking to some potential suspects or that sort of thing. Can a jury then, do you concede, as apparently the Simmons are arguing, that the jury then in own self can conclude whether or not this arson investigation was reasonable or not reasonable without the assistance of someone who knows something about arson investigation?
Yes, there doesn't need to be an expert. I'll agree with you, but there doesn't need to be an expert to reach the ultimate question of who set the fire. That the jury can answer that question, if I'm following your question correctly.
Well, yeah, you're answering my question. So it's your view that even though arson is an area that requires some specialized training and knowledge to investigate, the jury can formulate its own opinion as to whether or not the investigation was reasonable without anyone with experience or an elevated level of knowledge is expressing an opinion about how this investigation went. Do you think the jury is free to conclude that this was an arson investigation or was not?
And as a general rule, yes, the jury is able to conclude that. In this particular case, I think based on these undisputed facts, they shouldn't have concluded that. But I agree with you.
So
yes,
this is the if there is any evidence, in your view, if there is any evidence in the record which calls into question any of the facts upon which State Farm concluded that the arson was set by the Simmons, then the jury is free to conclude then that there was not a reasonable arson investigation.
Now, I won't go that far. What they are free to conclude then is that the breach of contract, that there was a breach of contract. But if what this court has said in Shelton is correct, and that proving bad faith is more than proving a breach of contract.
Well, maybe I wasn't clear about my question. My question had nothing to do with whether or not the jury is free to conclude that the Simmons didn't set the fire. Is the jury free to conclude, based on a dispute about some of the underlying facts, that the conclusion that Simmons set the fire was not a reasonable conclusion?
Not if they're looking at undisputed facts. I mean, if they're looking at what are undisputed facts, like in this case, they are not free to conclude that State Farm didn't have information that it had in front of them, for example. They're not free to conclude that the bank statements didn't say what they said. They're not free to conclude that the Simmons' admissions about the lock, whether it was locked and where they were at the time that we believe the fire started, are incorrect.
But since you've got to go the other direction, you have to say that there is no evidence that supports their conclusion that this was not a reasonable conclusion. And I guess my going again, there may not be a dispute as to what the bank records show, but there may be a dispute as to whether or not the doors were locked from the inside and whether or not that can be a basis for concluding that the Simmons set the fire, and the jury can conclude that that was not reasonable to use that as a basis for this. I mean, I go to my question again. When there's a dispute as to some of the elements that come to a conclusion of arson, the jury is free to make that decision as to whether or not that conclusion is reasonable.
And I disagree with that statement. I'm saying that they are not free to do that, because what they are only supposed to look at on the question of reasonable basis is what the insurance companies had in front of them and whether or not that information is disputed or not, when we're looking at it as a legal sufficiency point. So if there's an argument that the plaintiff can make at trial to say, well, yeah, I know that everybody reported that these doors were closed, but gee, maybe they weren't, then the jury is not free to disregard that evidence.
Let me ask you this along those lines of what you're arguing about, and that is, look, if your basis for the test is the information that the insurance company has in front of it, why wouldn't an insurance company then get a report that it looked like there was arson, get a report that maybe the homeowners were running behind in their payments, and then not do any further investigation, just leave it at that, because based upon that alone, they have enough information?
Well, the reason they wouldn't do that is they're going to lose the contract action, without a doubt. Well, as a baseline, they're going to lose the contract. It's kind of a silly thing to do for an insurance company to go out and make up facts.
No, I'm not saying making it up, but just if you get a report in saying that there was arson, but you can't tell who did it, and you get a real fact that the homeowners were behind in their mortgage payments, why wouldn't you just leave it there and do no further investigation? If that's going to be good enough to exonerate you from bad faith.
Let me answer that question by proposing a framework for dealing with the investigation, which I think is the question that we have in front of us today. The framework that I propose is that in looking at the second prong of the RAND as an investigation requirement, we subject the insured to prove or the claims to prove two different things. First, they should prove that the insurance company did not do a reasonable investigation for the type of claim that they had. Some claims don't need any investigation. Some claims need a whole lot of investigation. Secondly, and most importantly, is that the insured must have the burden to prove materiality. In other words, that the insurance company didn't do something that led to information that showed that the liability was in fact reasonably clear. And if you have those two things, that there should have been a reasonable investigation for the type of claim, and that the information that they didn't find would have been material, then you answer a lot of the questions that you have. This is not a new concept. In Miles, Columbia versus Miles, and the Paso court talks about it, and in St. Paul versus Luker, the court talks about it. So this materiality requirement is not something that we're just coming up with. And I think it answers those questions. Because at any point at trial, an investigation or an investigator could have done something more. You will never, ever have a review of an investigation, a legal sufficiency review of investigation, because I guarantee you in any investigation there's always something else that could have been done. So if you require that the something else that could have been done have a materiality requirement to it, then what you end up doing is you have an investigation that's reasonable, and if it wasn't reasonable, you have to show that what wasn't reasonable in fact would have made a difference.
The VA had lent the money for the home, and the claim was denied, and the VA was never paid any money by the insurance company. How would that work if this was arson committed by someone other than the homeowner?
Well, Your Honor, it would work kind of the same way. It worked. Well, let me explain to you how then it would work. The insurance company has a separate contract. The mortgage contract is considered to be a separate contract with the mortgage company. And no matter what the insurers do, no matter what the coverage problem is, the insurance company has a contractual duty to pay the mortgage company and here the VA. But once that happens, if there's a coverage dispute like there is here, the debt is not extinguished.
I understood they never paid the VA under that contract. Is that correct?
It is correct, Your Honor. And if you look at Defendant's Exhibit 293 and the testimony at 1240 to 1252, you'll see that State Farm communicated with the VA in an attempt to pay the money 12 separate times. In an end, in just a desperate measure, sends them a letter and sends them a release and says, sign this, and we will send you a check. The VA, for whatever reason, decided that they wouldn't take the money. They decided, I think they said at one point, that they would just take a deficiency judgment and then ask for the money from State Farm and handle it in that manner. But what you need to remember on the VA and with the mortgage is that if there is an arson, if there is a valid defense to the insured's claim, that the VA debt is not extinguished. It is simply assigned to State Farm. The debt still exists.
Any other questions? Thank you, sir. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. James Plummer with an argument from respondent.
May it please the court. If the facts of this case don't show bad faith, regardless of whether it's the older standard or the new standard in Giles, then there's no bad faith. In this particular case, and there are some factors that are unique that I think will assist the court in understanding why the Court of Appeals affirmed the judgment of the jury and why this case should need to be affirmed on all points. Justice Scenic asked a few minutes ago about whether or not the jury was free to make a determination about whether or not there was arson in some respects without expert testimony. One of the most unique things about this case is that at trial, the State Farm personnel, their special investigative personnel, people who had special training, educated the jury on two significant factors. One, what their responsibilities and what their duties were to their insurers. They explained that their responsibility and duties to the insured under the homeowner's policy was to find coverage. That's their job. To conduct a thorough investigation, an objective, systematic, thorough investigation. Their duty to the insurer, to the Simmonses, was to err in their favor when there was a close call, to give them the benefit of the doubt. Now, that may not be the standard that the court will say applies to every insurer, but that certainly was the standard State Farm testified to applied to them in their responsibilities to the Simmonses back in 1985. The second thing State Farm's personnel did was to explain how you and what you should do in conducting an investigation on an arson claim. And in doing so, they described the various characteristics of arson and arsonists. The way you identify that, how you go about determining whether somebody's an arsonist, they talked about the categories of arsonists: pyromaniacs, thrill seekers, what we call John Wayne type fire setters, people who want to set a fire because they want to be a hero, usually volunteer firemen in the Montgomery County area, things of that sort. They also talked about those indices that help identify whether or not a homeowner would commit arson, a crime, a felony crime. And they went down a long list of things. Now, the evidence in this case shows that none of those indices fit. None of those indices fit, and State Farm knew it. The evidence in this case showed that of all the various things that they said they should do in their investigation, many of them they didn't do. What the evidence does show in this case is that their investigation was outcome-oriented, targeted their insurers from the inception, from the beginning, and put together a package of information designed to achieve the results they started out to get. Let me give you some of the evidence and a suggestion. First of all, James and Cynthia Simmons had had a burglary 6 months before this. The burglars broke in the back door, the back window, ransacked and shackled the house, stole a lot of items, and then ironically left out the back door and carted all these goods off in a wheelbarrow. And they went through the woods behind the house. This is a semi-rural area of Montgomery County in New Canaan.
Mr. Fuller, State Farm says they attempted to locate the young man and have an explanation as to why.
Justice Gonzalez, let me respond to that this way. I don't think State Farm's explanations were sufficient for the jury, and I don't think there should be sufficient for this court. There are several reasons why. Number one, there was a wealth of information about these folks. The neighborhood canvas that State Farm did, a couple of the neighbors acknowledged these old boys were notorious. They committed vandalism in the neighborhood, and one of them had been seen riding around recently in that area. That's number one. Number two, there was a complete criminal file on these fellows, one item of which was a confession where they confessed to the Simmons burglary and how it happened. State Farm didn't know about that until trial. They never went upstairs to the county courthouse clerk's office to pick that up. Their explanations were that one of the boys was supposedly in Dallas, reportedly in Dallas. Well, based upon the list of criteria that State Farm gives about how you go about investigation, supposedly and reportedly is not enough, especially when you're accusing your own policyholder of a crime, of arson, and you're going to deny his claim and do what the other things they did to him. So I don't think, Justice Gonzalez, that was a sufficient explanation to the jury, and I don't think it should be a sufficient explanation to this court. Second about that is that even if one of the fellows was in jail, and even if one of the fellows was in Dallas, why don't you go talk to them? Find out whether they had any animosity toward James Simmons. Find out whether they might have been back in New Canaan on that particular day, or at least the one in Dallas.
You don't expect them to confess to arson.
Well, one of them confessed already. I mean, all of them confessed already to the burglar.
Not the arson.
Well, we won't know that unless we ask. And it's not. Bear in mind, Justice Gonzalez, that State Farm made it clear that the policyholder has no duty to go out and investigate, especially in this case when they didn't tell the policyholder, you're the target. The policyholder has no responsibility and duty under the insurance contract to go out and hire experts, especially if you don't tell them that there's a question that we're looking at you. So the policyholder has none of those responsibilities unless you raise the issue. Now, I'm sure, as Mr. Simmons testified in the trial, that whatever State Farm asked him to do, he did. They signed all the authorizations to get all this wealth of information, financial information on him. Didn't protest one bit.
How about giving back just a motive? You know.
Well, the problem with motive, opportunity, and incendiary origin, the arson triangle, is that it is a device to help you identify somebody. Help you identify somebody who might be inclined to commit this criminal act. But State Farm said in its report that the motive for James Simmons and Cynthia Simmons to burn their home, they particularly identified James as the person, the motive was the quote is that the most significant motive or the strongest aspect of this claim is motive. And that's to get out from under the burden of the Veterans Administration mortgage. Now, when they calculated the monthly mortgage obligation, and when they attempted to define that, why he would do this, why would they commit something like an act like this, they used erroneous information. They overstated his mortgage obligation by 180%. Okay? Now, And this is not a case about mistakes, because later on State Farm found out they were wrong. They found out that the information Mr. Simmons had given them about his monthly obligations was accurate. They chose not to include that, by the way, in their report. They didn't say, well, the VA says this, And Mr. Simmons says this.
Well, the monthly allegation is really in the issue, isn't it? It's the mortgage. It's the mortgage amount versus the insurance amount.
Justice Owen, I think the monthly obligation, what is the issue?
What was the mortgage amount? Was it more or less than the insured amount?
The monthly mortgage obligation at the time of this fire was $185 per
week.
What
was the debt? What was the outstanding debt?
$47,000.
And what was the insurance amount?
$47,000. By the way, the outstanding amount was $47,000 plus a little accrued interest because there was some late payment. So it may have been $2,000 or $3,000 more than that. And that's another point that State Farm failed to consider at all. If they had paid off this mortgage, it would not have relieved James and Cynthia Simmons of this this debt. They still have an excess amount, but more importantly, they wouldn't have a house. They wouldn't have a yard and a garage and all the other things that they moved out there for.
Mr. Plummer, let me interrupt you. What concerns me, what is of concern to me in this case, I don't know how significant each point of this evidence about the arson investigation is. And so I can't tell whether or not the mortgage issue is significant in an arson investigation. I can't tell whether the conduct of the family in taking a lot of the children's clothes out of the house is significant to an arson investigation. Now, I understand your position that you use State Farm's folks to say this is what State Farm does. But I'm not sure that a jury can, if it's a fact issue, which this court says the first prong is, if a jury is free to determine which of those incidences of investigation are the material ones such that they can conclude that the investigation was reasonable or not reasonable. And in the record in this case, I don't see any evidence by the Simmonses that point to this investigation demonstrating that this is not reasonable. And that's my difficulty in this case. The arson investigation is a forensic science. It requires some expertise to determine. I've looked at all this evidence, and this is material, this isn't material. And based on what is material, I'd make this conclusion. And I don't have anyone coming up here saying, well, a reasonable person couldn't make that conclusion because the material they're looking at is not, the items they're looking at is not material to an arson investigation. And it seems to me that, at least in my view, in this record, this is the key. So Ms. McKelp has conceded that a jury can determine what's material in an arson investigation, what's not, and they just disregarded the material stuff in coming to their conclusion. But I need more help than that.
Let me see if I can assist Justice Enig. There are two things I want to suggest. Number one, Ms. McKelp says this about undisputed evidence, and I think on page 5 of our response to her reply, we have taken her undisputed evidence and showed you what we think the evidence was. For example, all the children's clothes being taken, that wasn't an accurate statement, and the jury heard the totality of the testimony. So they were certainly able to look at the evidence and decide the accuracy of statements that were made by State Farm. That's number one. On the materiality issue, in this particular case, State Farm's own fire investigators said being behind in your mortgage is not an indicator that you would commit arson. Being behind on your bills and having done statements was not a significant factor. What they said was the more of these indicators we have, the more likely you are to be the arsonist. So in this case, I don't think it would be appropriate for us to be required to hire experts to dispute what some of their undisputed evidence was, and that was what the indicators were.
And that evidence was presented by State Farm as their expert investigators, isn't that correct?
That evidence was presented in two respects. First of all, their claims personnel, the SIU personnel, who had special training in fire investigation, describe that training, describe how you go down the list, and look at these various factors. Okay, that's number one. The only expert testimony was with regard to the chemist and the fire investigator, Richard Downey, who did a cause and origin report. But again, he wasn't charged with responsibility of identifying who. What he did was try to determine whether or not the fire was incendiary. Now, I would note that there was evidence in the record about a possible electrical source that questioned whether or not it was incendiary. But on the materiality issue, they said these things are important in that investigation, in an investigation. We then compared that to what they did in this case, and they didn't do those things, or those things did not exist. And we've also attached as an appendices to our response earlier that what those factors are and what the evidence was in that regard. They didn't exist. They didn't fit. Now, the way you make them fit is to focus only on your insured. For example, ignore the fellows who live down the road, or do ignore certain other things that you should do in an investigation in order to be thorough and be objective. Simple example. The person who reported the fire was a lady by the name of Mrs. Lawrence. It's important to talk to the person who reports the fire, first of all, to determine roughly when it happened, and then what she saw, and whether she saw anybody else on the road that night. You certainly want to do that soon. Well, they never contacted this woman until trial. During the whole investigation. And
did the Simmons contact her? Did they try to contact her?
Just a second. They did not. And part of the reason they did not is that nobody told them that they were the focus of the investigation. Had they done that...
Just out of curiosity, wouldn't they want to know if somebody was...
The first thing they did was go to the fire marshal's office and say, Mr. Investigator, what can you tell us about what happened to our house? And they gave them a fire alarm report and gave them their report, which said the fire was undetermined. I mean, they did, and they relied on State Farm.
When they were getting ready for trial, it looks like if this person were... with important evidence, it would have been important to track her down.
Before trial, we found her, and we talked to her.
And were there people in the neighborhood? Did you see people in the neighborhood?
This trial happened in 1991, or I think thereabouts.
6 years after the fire.
6 years after the fire.
After a mistrial. There was a first mistrial.
There was a mistrial, and this happened 6 years later.
It took 6 years to get the case to trial.
Yes, sir. And at that time, she had her husband had some health problems. We don't know what she would have recalled had State Farm done what it said it was going to do and do a thorough investigation.
But anyway, when you found her before trial, she wasn't able to help at all.
State Farm certainly tried to use her to their advantage at trial in trying to create a timeline. Interestingly, that timeline they tried to create when they asked her about the times. She discovered the fire and things of that sort, she reminded them she didn't have a watch, she had no idea. A timeline was nevertheless created.
All I was asking about was there anything she was able to give you at trial that helped exonerate the Simmons?
Nothing, yes. And that was that the Simmons weren't there when she passed by.
Well, but there was no dispute about that, was there?
Beg your pardon?
There was no dispute.
There was no dispute about that, none at all. And there was no dispute that they didn't do other things in their investigation that they should have done that they said they should do.
But with respect to that lady, what good would it have done to run her down if even at trial she didn't have anything to help the sentence?
I think it would...
Why run down people that don't know anything?
Well, because they could have found out more precisely what occurred at that time, what they found, and you do it then. You don't wait 6 years later to do it.
If they had, now that we know what she knows, if they had done that at the time, would it have helped the Simmons in that
place? Particular event would not have helped the Simmons. Had they talked to the first fireman on the scene, perhaps they could make some determination that the access to the back of the house was, as Dan Downing said, such that there was evidence of breaking. They didn't do that. They didn't try to do that. Tim Maddox, the fellow who had created problems for the Simmons before, lived across the street from the first fireman on the scene. Had they talked to the first fireman on the scene, they might have discovered whether or not Tim Maddox's light was on at that hour of the night. There were a lot of things that they could have done. But if you're not interested in determining those things, then you only focus on those things that affect your policyholder. And that's what this investigation was.
The argument on the other side is that they ought to be material. And Well, it ought to make a difference.
I agree with that. I agree with that, Justice.
So how do any of those make a difference?
Because in the list of things that State Farm's fire claims people said you should do to do a proper, thorough fire investigation is to talk to the first fireman on the scene, because they can give you useful information that tells you not only about the fire, perhaps about the neighborhood and what's going on in that neighborhood. And in this case, it was particularly so since the first fireman lived across the street from Tim Maddox.
But I guess my question again is, these people didn't die or leave or go away or become inaccessible during the proceeding, I assume. Did it ever come to light that, yes, if we had known what the first fireman on the scene had known, we would have evaluated this differently?
They never talked to them, so they never were able to determine one way or the other what they did. And bear in mind that there were a whole list of other items like that the State Farm didn't do. And they are the ones who said it should be done.
But is there any indication in the record that if they had done them, it would have changed it?
Yes. And the indication is, let's put it this way. They didn't look at the confessions and the criminal file on these fellows. It is certainly conceivable that had they done so, it would have changed the outcome, not only of the trial, but it certainly would have, they would have denied this claim.
Do you remember when the case was filed?
The case was filed about 1986, I believe.
Do you remember why it took 6 years to get to trial?
There were some substantial discovery fights, for one thing. We didn't get the claim file until the weekend before that first trial. The court mentioned the mistrial, so we didn't have the claim file until just before that. So that was one of the major fights to get to trial.
But, Ms. Bowen, we're looking at this case with a tremendous amount of hindsight. But to make a determination of which of these indices is significant in the conclusion for the purpose of determining whether the investigation was reasonable or not, there's just nothing in the record that points in the direction that it was reasonable or not reasonable. We simply have, here's a list of indices, this is what we look at, you didn't look at those indices, and therefore...
Let me see if I can succinctly respond to that. State Farm's folks say this is how a proper investigation should be done from State Farm's standpoint. The jury looks at that, and the jury looks at what they do, what they actually did, and the jury makes the determination whether or not their conduct was reasonable under the circumstances. In this case, especially in the absence of the motive and opportunity factors fit, and especially in light of what they which State Farm chose as its significant motive being totally wrong. The jury determined that their investigation, and they had no reasonable basis to deny this claim, and it was reasonably clear that liability existed and they didn't follow.
If the head of State Farm had said at trial, we shouldn't be negligent, but we were negligent, is that evidence of bad faith?
It's negligence wasn't the standard that was applied. The question was whether or not it was a reasonable basis. And so the jury would be entitled to find they were negligent, but that's not evidence of bad faith. The bad faith standard was whether or not there was a reasonable basis to deny this claim. And the jury determined that there was not, and the evidence was there was substantial evidence that there was no reasonable basis to deny this claim, and that it was reasonably clear.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel.
May I please report? I think that what Justice Peck has said proves the point about materiality, and that is that it is crucial to us, when you're judging the investigation that an insurance company has done, to look at if they didn't do something, it wasn't material to the outcome.
So they really wouldn't have to make any investigation at all. They can just flat deny the claim and try it later, and unless the plaintiff can come up with virtually undisputed evidence that indeed the claim shouldn't be denied, the tort liability is no problem.
Well, I just don't think that will ever happen, because if you think about it, Your Honor, if the senator simply came to the State Farm and said, we would like our money, this is how much we lost in the fire, if State Farm did no investigation, liability is reasonably clear.
But that's what you're saying is, we don't, I mean, you're saying what the people that lost the Arnold case said, that you'll lose on the contract and that's good enough, and we really don't have to worry about any extra contractual remedies.
Well, no, Your Honor, what I'm saying is it's probably going to be, and I couldn't really come up with an example where an insurance company could simply do no investigation at all and still have a claim that is not
reasonable. But you're saying you can do no investigation, and unless it turns out that you missed something by not doing the investigation, then that bad faith is not implicated. And it seems to me we said the opposite in Stoker. We left open the possibility that a breach could come about purely by an investigation being so poor that it was a denial, it was a failure to act in good faith. It was bad faith, regardless of the ultimate merit of the claim.
Exactly, and without agreeing with that, I think that perhaps there may be a situation when that can happen. This is not one of those.
Didn't State Farm's own testimony determine that the investigation was inadequate?
What State Farm's testimony was what are all of the universe of things that can happen in investigating an arson fire of any type, not the Simmons' arson fire, but of any type. And State Farm provided information about things that you could do.
And that you ought to do?
That you could do, and in a given situation, you might should do. And in this particular case, it's also undisputed that State Farm looked, for example, when Mr. Collins was talking about the person who reported the fire, we looked for him. We just didn't find her. When we found her, she gave information that actually helped us, and her testimony was presented at trial. I'd like to go back to the question about the various indices.
Before you go further, yes. I understand that your view is it's the materiality of the things that were or were not done. In a particular, he characterized their testimony at the trial that they told the jury what its obligations are in an investigation and listed a series of items. Can he then be making the argument that whatever they said their obligations were all material, otherwise why shouldn't they be there? And if you left them out, whatever it was, it's going to be a material thing that you left out, regardless of what the after found out fact might be at the time of trial.
I think that the only way you can judge one is by the after found out fact, because if you try to judge it from the universe of what you can investigate, let me give you an example. In some arson fires, if for example, it's a fire of a business, well then you ought to look at the business of finance. Along with the principal owner's finances to see if there's a financial motive. But here, that wasn't done because there was no business. So that's the sort of thing that they said that State Farm didn't do. And what I'm telling you is that those didn't apply in this particular case.
So, in other words, if you take the laundry list that State Farm put into evidence, then State Farm makes a determination that this item or that item is not material because of the circumstances of the particular claim. Is that right?
And it has to be that way. And for the example that I gave you, you know, that the business you look at it one way and the person you look at it another way, you can't do the same investigation.
Well, then let me ask you, were the items that they put into evidence in this case for this claim all the ones that they said they were obligated to do under this claim under these circumstances?
The question was never asked, what were they obligated to do in this particular case? Well, the questions we're asking cross-examination is, in an arson case, could you look at this? In an arson case, should you investigate that? And their answer was, well, of course, because all arson claims are different, you investigate them differently, and quite frankly, you have different indices and different ones for whether it should be paid or not.
But Ms. McCulp, I understood you to say that that's up to the jury to decide whether it was reasonable to consider that or not consider it.
It's up to the jury to make calls and judgment calls on disputed facts. But it's not up to the jury to make judgment calls on undisputed facts. And that's what we have to do.
No, but the indice is that you check on this item, and the evidence is they didn't check on that item. And I thought you said it's up to the jury to decide whether it was reasonable to check or not check on that item.
Well, only within the context, if you understand here, the fire marshal and the other people testified
the kind of indices you look for in an arson by an insurer. And one of the most important ones you look at, the fire marshal said, is financial motive. And so if the jury totally disregarded the financial motive when the fire marshal said that's something you have to look at, then that was wrong.
All right. Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the argument. And the third cause, the court will take another brief recess.